How many people have looked at the bulletin this morning? Okay. Craig Otterback is the one that does the weekly bulletin, The Humble Messenger. I really encourage you to look at the articles that he puts in it. He's very attentive to try to coordinate the articles with, say, if we have a gospel meeting, finding articles by that preacher, or if there's a topic we're studying. And he put an article on the family that I'd written some time back, but he put that in today, and it's perfectly appropriate for our study today. And it's about marriage counselors. I want to say at the very outset, I'm not saying it's wrong to go to a marriage counselor. But I am saying, beware. So where do we get our advice for marriage, especially if we're in trouble? You may say, we'll go to someone who's been trained, somebody that's been to a university, somebody that's got a degree. I strongly encourage you to read the article that Craig put in the Humble Messenger this morning. You will see that the advice you get is not always good advice. You say, isn't that true as preachers? It is. You can go to preachers and get terrible advice. You can go to your family and get bad advice. One of the worst places is social media, you know, Facebook or one of those mediums. The best place, the place that you can be sure the counsel is right, is, as we prayed with Eric just a moment ago, is to go to the maker of marriage, his counsel. And that's what we have in this book we call the Bible. And seek his counsel as to how do I correct, how do I make better this relationship. So, we asked the question right at the end of question number 8 on lesson 2. You see that for thought? Why do you believe what you do about the role of husband or wife? Is it a matter of your culture? You say, well, man said, I know what a husband's supposed to be because I see my dad and I'll do what my dad did. Or a woman, what my mom did. Is it a matter of society, the people you work with? Well, I know what they do. Here's a guy that's been married 10 years or 20 years, and we talk. And so it's been working for 20 years. I'll do what he does. Is that where we get our advice? And then, of course, the very thing I just got through talking about. Sometimes people go to marriage counselors. Any of those sources, you may pick up good advice, but you may pick up advice that will be destructive to your relationship and not pleasing to God. So the question is, when we, in our lesson, we looked at 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 16 and 17. The question is not whether we know what that text says. The question is whether we believe it. And how do you demonstrate your faith? Follow it. Works. That's what James said, right? And so that verse says that the Scripture is profitable for, what's the first thing? Teaching or doctrine. What is marriage? What's the purpose of marriage? Where did marriage begin? It's profitable for reproof. What is that? Show you where you're wrong. You've gotten off course. Would it apply to marriage? Yeah. Do we believe it? Your marriage is out of whack, or you want to make it better. Do we open the Bible, or do we get our iPhones and say, let me see what's on social media. Maybe somebody else had this problem. Which way do we go? But then, the third thing is what? Correction. Now, things are askew. I need to get them back on the right track. He says the Scriptures are profitable for that. And then, I'm on the right track. Now, I don't want to go down that wrong path again, so I need to be trained. What's that fourth thing? Training in righteousness, right? Do we believe that? Our approach in this study is that foundation. We sing songs about Psalm 19, verse 7 through the end there of that psalm. How the Word of God is pure and sure and faithful, clean and right. Do we believe it? That it's sure, that it's faithful, that you can trust it? Well, the answer is in where we go for the answers to life's critical questions, and certainly our family is one of those areas. We ask you a question number 9 on lesson 2. According to 1 John chapter 3 and verse 4, how does John define sin? transgression of the law, or lawlessness, depending on your translation. That's right. And chapter 5, 17, all unrighteousness is sin. So, would that be true of marriage relationships, that a violation of God's law would be called sin?
Yes.
It would, wouldn't it? So, we have on your lesson, which of the following would be sin? A wife refuses to respectfully submit to her husband. Number two, a husband is inconsiderate of his wife's feelings. Number three, a mate obstinately withholds sexual obligations from their mate. Number four, divorcing a mate for any other reason than fornication. And number five, parents who leave all spiritual training to the church. Which one of these is sin? All of them. We'll see that in the course of our study. So it's not a matter of what the preacher says in the Bible class. It's not a matter of what the elders say, what the church I go to says. You'll find a church that'll approve anything you want to do, nearly. It's a matter of what's in this book and a violation of the principles that govern the marriage relationship. Lawlessness, John said, is sin. In Isaiah chapter 8, 19 and 20, back in the time of Isaiah, people were looking for answers. Judah was in trouble. Their nation had been ravished. Isaiah 8, 19, where does he indicate that they go to? Media. What's a media? All right. Somebody what?
I said an answer. Somebody really stands between you and spiritual.
That's the idea of media, in between, see? So you need counsel. Where are we going to go? To the dead. That's the idea. Spiritual. Well, let me call up somebody in the past. Maybe a relative or somebody supposed to be a philosopher. And that's what they were doing. But now look here at Isaiah 8:19. When they say to you, consult the mediums and the spiritists who whisper and murmur. Should not a people consult their God? Should they consult the dead on behalf of the living? And then you have the answer to the next question on your lesson in this next verse. To what did the prophet say they should turn to? So verse 20, to the law and to the testimony. Why to the law? Okay, but why confidence in the law? Why go to it? That's right. It's God's law. That's why. He's our maker. He's eternally wise, powerful. He loves mankind to the law and to the testimony. That's how you consult God. Not through mediums. Not through feelings and experiences and friends and neighbors. To the law and to the testimony. And then you have this next phrase there in that verse. If they do not speak according to this word. So you go ask somebody some advice. How do you test it? Here it is. You're real familiar with Acts 17:11, aren't you? Right? You can quote part of it, right? What'd they do? Try it. I see some mouths moving. They searched the scriptures to see if the things being said were so. Who was saying them? Paul, an apostle. Are they commended for that attitude? Yes. Noble-minded. That's in the New Testament, first century. Here we're back 700 years, time of Isaiah. Same advice. Somebody says something, and he said, if they do not speak according to this word, law of the testimony. And we're in a great advantage of the people of Judea, or the people in the first century, because we have it all. They didn't. It was still being written. And there is no more. So now I've got the complete law and testimony that God wants men to have to guide our lives, and that certainly includes the family. I have number 11. We've already talked about mediums. And I mentioned social media, family, those kind of things. Where else do people turn to find answers for the questions about the family? What? Priest? Good answer. What?
Friends.
I didn't understand you.
Friends.
Yes, friends. Your dear friend. Let me go talk to them. Is it bad to talk to a friend? But what happens when they tell you, here's what you ought to do? Isaiah 8, it's not according to this word. Acts 17, 11. That's right. Anybody try to get the answer in the stars? What's that called?
Astrology.
Sure. There's all kinds of sources people go to. Sometimes it's just feeling. Well, I just feel like this is the right thing to do. All of that is very sandy soil. You have the rock solid foundation. Jesus says you build on my word, you build on the rock. And it'll withstand the storms of time. Matthew chapter 7. Okay, so let's suppose then we have some problems in our marriage, and there's nobody that I know of that tells the truth that never has problems. Somebody tells you, we've never had a problem in our marriage, they're probably lying. In fact, I think I've told you the story about my cousin one time. I asked, talked to her, said, oh, we've never had an argument. Didn't believe her then. Next year I was sure of it when they divorced. And so people have arguments. And people have differences. And so, what is the real issue that's causing this problem? And so that's what our next study goes to. If we're aware, truly aware of the problem, then maybe we can work on it. But sometimes we really don't understand what the problem is. And how do we understand the problem with our mate? I say, well, that's a good question. I wish I knew. Well, that's our next study. So go to lesson 3. Of all the things that we're going to talk about in the family, in my opinion at least, this is one of the most difficult. Seems simple, but yet it's one of the most difficult for us to be able to master. And that is true and open communication. So we've got some questions on your lesson. Let's turn to Genesis 11 to begin. Genesis chapter 11. When you look at Genesis chapter 11, there's a statement here. You know what they were going to do. They were going to try to build this Tower of Babel. And look at verse 8 at the end of the verse. What happened? They stopped. They gave up. They quit. Something, they had this goal of building this majestic tower, and they quit. Something diverted their plans and their goals. Well, when we look at the text, we ask you the question, what reason does the text give for the work of building the city stopping? What was the reason? They didn't understand one another. Verse 6 said they all have the same language. And so he said, nothing will be impossible. So he said, let us go down there and confuse their language so that they will not understand one another's speech. Can you imagine being there? You're a bricklayer. You're up on the tower. You're working. Hey down there, send me some more bricks. He sends you up some mortar. Did you understand me? I said, more bricks. He sends you up a shovel. After a while, you think, boy, that guy's a dummy. Or he just doesn't want to be cooperative or something. And they gave up. That's what happens in families. You say, I said it clearly, but the other person didn't understand. Or vice versa. And so that's what happened. They stopped building the city. That's why some families reach a status. It's not a everyday joyful relationship. There's moments of happiness, but we've reached this status. We've been married a year, 5 years, 10 years. We've got a status. We can live with it. But getting better, that probably will never happen. We'll stay together because God wants us to, and we have love for one another. Would you like to build to the next level and the next level? Key is understanding one another. I'm going to talk about in the lesson this morning, if I don't change when I get up there, about the family and the sermon this morning. And we're going to talk about Satan's schemes. This is one of his schemes. He's smart. He's cunning. He's evil. He wants to destroy families, at least to restrict them. And so if he can get to where people can't communicate, he has a powerful tool in his arsenal. So you say, well, we do communicate because we talk. Because people talk, does that mean they communicate? Yeah. No. The word communicate, many of you in this class may remember we've talked about this word before. It comes from what word? Common. That's right. There's no communication unless whatever's in the speaker's mind becomes common with the hearer. They don't have to agree, but whatever thought it is has to be common, shared between them. Or if one's on one page and one's on another. One's working on 2 plus 2 and the other's working on 6 plus 9. They can't come to the same answer. And so if you put two people in two different rooms, you get 1 2 plus 2 and 1 6 plus 9, say, I want y'all to get the right answer. You bring them back in the room, what's the right answer? One gives one answer, one gives the other thinks, what's wrong with this person? Are they did not go to school or something? That's not a hard question. But they don't realize the other person's working on a different problem. And that's what happens in marriages. So it comes from the idea of common. You can look it up in a dictionary. I've got dictionary definitions here. That communicate implies making something common between two people. So don't assume we talk, therefore we communicate. That's not necessarily so. Look at Proverbs 14. We've got a number of verses in this lesson from Proverbs. What is the book of, what is the nature of the book of Proverbs?
Words of wisdom.
Words of wisdom. Very good. Are they hard and fast rules? No, they're general principles to which there are exceptions, but they're wisdom, wise words that will give us guidance, that will help us in everyday life. Very practical stuff. So over here in Proverbs chapter 14, verse 1, the wise woman builds her house. The foolish tears it down with her own hands. We just talked about the Tower of Babel. So she builds her house. So what would be an essential to building it? Communication, wouldn't it? Right. How's she going to build her family relationship with her husband and her children if there's a lack of communication? And then sometimes women don't try to communicate. They just get mad, scream, holler, whatever, throw the dishes. Say, what's wrong with my marriage? I just got a bad one. No, there's this building block. Look at chapter 24, verse 3. By wisdom, a house is built. What's the next line? We talked about Proverbs here in a Sunday night class recently. A figure of speech that throughout Proverbs. What is it? Parallelism. Two lines of parallel. And that's what you have here. So by wisdom, a house is built. And what, in the next line, is synonymous with wisdom?
Understanding.
So it's not just the wisdom, it's understanding. Understanding wisdom. And by knowledge, so wisdom, understanding, knowledge, the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. So it's not a matter of, I'm going to get married, I've got to be sure and get the right one. If I get the right one, we'll have a good marriage. That's not the answer. There is something about the right one. It's somebody that appreciates this book. We talked about that last class. It's not a matter of just going to church. They may go to church, never read their Bible. Don't trust it. But trusting that the wisdom in this book is the guidance for life. You don't have to turn to Mark 3:25. I've got it on your lesson. You know this verse. Jesus says a house divided cannot stand. He wasn't talking about the family there. He was talking about a conflict in the Pharisees' argument. They said, you're out doing the works of the devil, and yet he's destroying the works of the devil. He said, that doesn't make sense. But while we're using it to the family, it's still a truth. It's an incidental truth that a house, he used that image, it's a house divided will not stand. And so what happened to the Tower of Babel? You see, it didn't work. What happens to a family if there's a breakdown in communication? It's very possible that family, if it won't break up, will reach that status. That, well, we'll put up with it and live it at that level, but we'll never build and never grow. So it's very important. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 14. Now, don't answer out loud, okay? How many of you are married to a barbarian? Don't answer. Just think about it. You know, your mate may over there be saying in their heart, I'm married to one. And so look at 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 7. This is a chapter about spiritual gifts, as you know, and focusing on the gift of tongues. And so look at verse 11. He talks about how those Christians in the church at Corinth could be a barbarian in the New American Standard. Your version may have a different translation in verse 11. This verse says a barbarian. And when we think of a barbarian, what do we think of? What do we picture? Got a bone in his nose, you know, or something. I don't know. But something that just, chews on concrete or something. But that's not it. And so, what is he talking about? He said, if I do not know the meaning of the language. In this case, it was different language, different, like Greek versus Hebrew. But note he said, back up, he said, verse 9, if you utter by the tongue speech that is clear, how will it be known what is spoken? For you, if you do not utter by the tongue speech that is clear, unless you do that, you'll be speaking into the air. If it's not clear what you say, It just goes over the head, see? So that was true with just assembly in the church at Corinth. Guy gets up and he prays. And he prays in the dialect of the language that he learned from he was a boy over in some other country. Great prayer. But what good does that do the fellow that's been living over here all his life? Nothing. He's got this tremendous gift, and he's able to speak in a language he never learned, but nobody else in the congregation knows it. What good does it do him? None. Now, of course, in the charismatic movement, they say, oh, yeah, it's good. We just know the Spirit's moving. But the Spirit's not guiding the guy who said that, because the Spirit who wrote this book says, no, it's not doing any good. In other words, there has to be understanding for there to be edification. Well, the same is true in the family. You can speak, but if the other person doesn't know what you're saying, a husband or wife ever say, I don't know what she's talking about, or he's talking about? That ever said, you reckon? If you're honest, you'll say, yeah, I don't know what they're talking about. Sure, that happens. So there's a problem, but you don't know what the problem is. How can you fix the problem if you don't know what it is? That's the need to, whatever's on that other person's mind needs to become common with me. I may not agree that it's the problem they picture, but I at least need to understand how they feel and why they feel that way so we can work on the problem. 2 Samuel 10. Look at 2 Samuel 10. As you're turning over there, I've got a question on your sheet for thought. Don't answer out loud. This is just for you to think about. Do you know your mate? And does your mate think you know them? Do they agree that you know them? You say, oh yes, I know my mate and they know I know them. You know how to put that to the test? Go ask them. The husband and wives would say, I don't even know that guy or that woman. Do you really know them? And so that's where communication comes in so to be so valuable. Look at 2 Samuel chapter 10. So, if you were to read the entire chapter, which we're not going to do, down through verse 19, when you could get down to verse 7 on following, what's going to be described as a war between Israel and the Ammonites. And people lost their lives. Bad results. What led to war? What could lead people to fight and kill one another? Well, go back up in the text, and we ask the question, why did David send ambassadors to Hanan? To show kindness. Verse 2, David said, I want to console him. You know, he lost his father. I want to just reach out to him. That was David's motive. Remember we talked about common? Did the Ammonites, were they on the same wavelength? No. So we ask you the next question. Why did Hanan think he sent the men? Verse 3. To spy it out. So the motive was not common. That is, Hanan didn't understand it. And so there was war. Yes?
I think it's fair to say that often, more often than not, when there is argument or people are upset, that the reason is a misunderstanding of intent or motive more than it is a misunderstanding of the content of the conversation.
Good point. If y'all didn't hear that in the back, I don't know how Eric and his wife gets along. They don't speak loud enough to be heard normally. But anyway. but he was saying, when there's an argument, it's not the words that are said as much as misunderstanding the motive behind them. That's a good observation. Maybe it was meant to be helpful. The person takes it as critical. Not understanding, not kind. They didn't mean it that way, or vice versa, something like that. So that's a good observation that Eric made. Now, how do you solve that? Well, you may have to spend about the next 30 minutes talking about it. Spend the time to try to work through it so that you understand one another. That's so critical to a good relationship. That's a good observation. All right, so if communication is critical to a good relationship, which it is, why don't people communicate? Well, what stands in the way of communication? So the next part of your lesson, you see that we've got the heading there. Barriers, things that stand in the way, walls in the way of communication. Again, these are general principles, not applicable to every case, but they're things to give us some reason to think. Let's start with Proverbs 11, verse 13. Proverbs 11, verse 13. Here's a question, but I don't want you to answer out loud again. Do you trust your mate if you talk to them that it's going to stay between you and your mate? Are you afraid? If it's a man, he'll talk to the other guys at work or his friends, or if it's a woman, she's going to text her friends or call her friends and talk about it. And if you're concerned about that, will you talk freely? Will you unfold yourself? So, no, I'm holding back. I don't want this to get out and everybody be talking about how I feel. Maybe you're ashamed about how you feel. You're not proud of it. But now here, Proverbs 11, 13. He who goes about as a tale bearer, bears tales, reveals secrets. So there are certain things that ought to be secret between a husband and wife. Intimate things, things that you're not proud that you did or said, but they're secret between y'all. But note the next line. He who is trustworthy conceals the matter. It's not a matter of trying to cover sin. We're not talking about that. There's just some things that are private, and they ought to stay private. And if you want to engender communication, your mate needs to have that confidence that I can talk about how I feel. Later you may look at it and say, I was foolish to feel that way. I don't know why. I know that's me at least. I think, what in the world? That was stupid to even feel that way in the first place. But I really don't want my wife going and get the directory and start calling everybody and telling them how stupid their husband is. They already know that anyway. But anyway, you're trustworthy. You conceal a matter. And so this is a barrier to communication. It'll put up a wall if your mate doesn't trust you to conceal, to keep private certain things. Now, is there ever a time when something that's secret between a husband and wife does need to be revealed? Yes. Matthew 18. Y'all familiar with Matthew 18, right? So, you got a problem with someone, you talk to them. They won't listen, what do? Get one or two more. Confirm it. They won't listen, tell the church. Especially if your mate's supposed to be a Christian. But sometimes you just reach an impasse. And you have to have help. That happens. But that shouldn't be the standard. That's the exception, hopefully. So I don't want to leave the idea, because sometimes people go into terrible marriages because they say, I just can't tell anybody else about this. Sometimes you do need to tell somebody about certain things. Maybe your mate's unfaithful, or you question that, or there's other problems in the relationship. Maybe a wife's got a husband that's abusive. Things like that. And they may really need to have some outward input. Okay, chapter 15. Chapter 15. My wife can tell you this. She's not in here, but I hate flies. And she hates it if we're fixing to go to bed and I hear a fly. So I want to try to find that rascal. Wally can testify to this. We were on a vacation together with them. I believe it was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And they were in the room next to us at an old hotel. And they thought I'd beat my wife up. Because there was a fly in our room, and I had a newspaper, and I was swatting everything I could find, swatting the walls and everything else to get that fly. Now, what if I'd had a maul? I'll get that rascal, I'll be sure. I'd take that maul and swing it against the wall. Well, it'd have killed the fly. But it'd have done a lot more damage. That's how sometimes we handle problems in our relationship. Proverbs 15, verse 1. A gentle answer turns away wrath. but a harsh word stirs up anger. There may be times for hard, painful, the word here means painful words. But oftentimes the painful words are the first thing we grab for. So I hear that fly, forget the newspaper or the fly swat, I'm going to get my maul in the garage. How foolish. And that's the way sometimes our relationships are. A gentle word. So, say, why doesn't my mate communicate with me? Well, because every time they try to do it, you lash out in anger. You get mad and say all kind of hurtful things. Does that encourage communication next time? No, it doesn't. So the question is, do I want to build that tower up to the next level, or am I going to stay down here at this level and quit building? It's up to you. But here are the barriers to communication. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 18. This is a proverb to remember right here. There is one who speaks rashly. That's what we're talking about, speaking rashly. Look what he compares it to, the thrust of a sword. But the tongue of the wise brings healing. So let's say Austin gets mad at Eric. He says, I'll fix you. He pulls out a big old pocket knife and rips through his stomach. He says, oh, Eric, I'm sorry. And maybe he really is. So when he says, I'm sorry, Eric pulls off his shirt, no scar. Right? No. He may have a scar for the rest of his life. And people say things in the heat of anger. Your mate will never forget. And I've heard people do this. Say all kind of things. Call their mate stupid and all kind of things. I don't know why I married you. Stuff. You may be sorry later. Your mate may forgive you later. But forgiveness and forgetting are two different things. Remember that when we think we need to lash out, that may live with you and your mate for the rest of your lives. And so the idea of trying to find a better way to answer than maybe just giving in to our wrath. It's interesting to me in the Colossian letter, you know, these people came out of the world. And you write to them about the family in Colossians chapter 3, verse 19. It's interesting here, and also in 1 Peter chapter 3, which we'll study in a later lesson if the Lord is willing. The men particularly are admonished along this line. He said in verse 19, husbands, love your wives. Now this version says, and do not be embittered against them. The New International Version says, do not be harsh. And the New Revised Standard Version says, never treat them harshly. Why was that necessary in the Colossian society? Maybe that's the way they had lived in Colossae. People in the world never think about that kind of thing. So he writes to these men who are now Christians. He said, you can't talk to your wife like maybe you used to, or your daddy did to your mama. You don't treat them harshly. You don't act out of bitterness to them. And so here's some counsel for those of us who call ourselves saints. Here's a letter to saints. But he's talking about saints who have a relationship to a mate. And particularly you and I, men, we sometimes, men, can crush our wives by the tone of our voice, sometimes the look on our face. You know, I've been accused falsely, I know, of people in this class saying I look mean up here. But I know that's not true. But anyway, we can do that. And so, do we want to have a good building relationship, or we want to cut it off? It's up to us to try to listen to these words of wisdom that we find in the book of Proverbs. In Proverbs chapter 21, verse 23, he who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from troubles. How many of us can say amen to that one? How many times have we opened our mouth and we should have kept it shut? Get ourselves in trouble and say, oh, I wish I hadn't said it. Too late. So maybe it's better, before we speak rashly, stop and think about it a moment. Look at chapter 29, verse 11. Boy, I got a temper. Well, what does he say about a temper here? A fool always loses his temper. Instead of marking you as a wise man, he said it's just the opposite. A wise man holds it back, controls his temper. So anger can be a devastating thing. It certainly can be in a marriage. Look at Job. I've got about 2 or 3 minutes. Look at Job 19, question number 6. Verse 1 through 3. So we ask a question here. how did Job feel? That's part of it. Second is, why did he feel that way? So, how did he feel about what they said? What?
Insulted.
That's right. He said, you crushed me. You torment me with your words. It's painful what you're saying. Why did he feel that way? End of verse 3. You wronged me. You accused me of things that aren't true. Job's suffering. They said, Job, you're just a big old sinner. You just fess up. Everything be lovely. He said, no, I'm not. Read Job 31. It's a chronicle of his integrity. Job didn't deny he ever sinned. That's not it. But he said, I'm not hiding some big old sin in Job's mind and in these three guys' mind, his friends. If you live righteous, God blesses you. You have good health, prosperity, big family. If you sin, live wrong, God punishes you. Job lost his health, lost his family, lost his friends, lost his wealth. So Job, we know what the answer is. You're just a big old sinner and you won't confess it. He said, that's not true. And so we can feel like we know why somebody or that somebody's guilty when it really may not be so. That's not right. We better be sure before we make accusations. And Job was insulted because of that. So Leviticus 19, real quick. Look at Leviticus 19. We'll stop with these verses we have here. I want you to note this section, Leviticus 19, verse 18. This is where this famous phrase comes from. Verse 18. You'll love your neighbors yourself. What did Jesus say about that phrase? Second greatest commandment. How does it apply? Start reading back up in verse 9. You'll see all the negatives all the way through verse 18. And go down to verse like 32 and following, and you'll see some of the positives as well as the more negatives. But we're out of time. But that's how you love your neighbor. You don't do these things, and you do these things. It's not some kind of funny feeling you have in your heart. It's shown in practical application. The same thing is true with husbands and wives. We'll pick up, may talk about Leviticus 19 a bit more in our next class. Deuteronomy 25, great lesson, verse 13 through 16 along that line. So we may talk about those and finish up question 6, and hopefully get through the communication lesson. I'd like to. I may be dreaming, but I hope to get through the communication lesson. I can tell some of you worked on the lesson, gave it some thought, and it's encouraging to me. Appreciate it. Hope you will do the lesson, give it some thought, so we'll be ready for our class, if the Lord is willing, Wednesday night. Thank you.